If you've been paying attention over the past 3 days, you've known that the story that originally went out from Doug Whaley over at 93.7 during the morning show, that Mike Tomlin might be interested in going to LSU or USC, has gotten a lot of legs, because Ryan Clark picked it up and said, well, if he wants to come to LSU, then LSU should do anything possible they can do to get him there. And it's not the first he's heard of it. And they should make him an offer so big it would be an insult to Lord Jesus Christ himself if he turned it down. Ryan's words, not mine. So you've got former Steeler front office guy Doug Whaley. You've got former Steeler safety Ryan Clark talking about it. Then you've got former Pro Bowl quarterback and former Mike Tomlin opponent. I think it was Mike Tomlin opponent. Yeah, when he was with the Raiders at least, and I think with the Cardinals. Carson Palmer, USC grad, saying that Mike Tomlin is in the mix, essentially. What do you say? A wild card candidate to fill the USC vacancy. And that's coming from one of the Trojans' most noted alumni. So the story had legs. And I think part of the reason why it had legs was no one was around to ask Mike Tomlin if there was any truth to this, because it was the bye. And he didn't tweet about it. He didn't put out a statement. He didn't call into the Dan Patrick show to refute it after Carson Palmer was on. So I asked at the press conference today, and this was Tomlin's response.
Mike, at any point in your coaching career, did you ever have an interest or express an interest in being a head coach in the college game? And do you have any idea how that may or may not have led to folks like Ryan and Doug Whaley and Carson Palmer connecting you to some college jobs?
Hey, guys, I don't have time for that speculation. I mean, that's a joke to me. I got one of the best jobs in all of professional sport. Why would I have any interest in coaching college football? That'll be the last time that I address it. And not only today, but moving forward. Never say never, but never. Okay? Anybody else got any questions about any college jobs? It's not a booster with a big enough blank check. Thank you. Anybody asking Sean Payton about that? You know, anybody asking Andy Reid about stuff like that?
And I will reiterate that, yes, Sean Payton was rumored to be a candidate in 2015 for the same USC job when it was vacant before. I don't know if anybody directly asked him about it, but he was brought up for it. And if Tomlin feels like his status is such that he shouldn't be bothered with such rumors and speculation, well, I'd agree, but Sean Payton had a Super Bowl under his belt by then too. 412-333-9939. And I've gotten split response for even asking Tomlin the question. The biggest answer that I was looking for, people are like, well, what was he going to say? Yes, he was going to USC. No, he wasn't going to say that. What was he going to say? He's going to LSU. No, he wasn't going to say that. But if he gave a piddly non-answer answer like James Franklin has done time after time, job after job, that'd be a story, wouldn't it? So he gave a definitive no. He said, never say never, but never, you know, and he made it seem as much as humanly possible that it was out of left field that anybody could speculate about this, and he's got a better job here in Pittsburgh, and he doesn't want anything to do with college, that shot down the discussion much quicker than James Franklin has so far at Penn State. So he gave a definitive answer. That's what I was looking for, a definitive answer. I got what I was looking for. I don't care that he bit my head off doing it. That's fine. He got his point across. If I was the fulcrum to make that happen, so be it. I'm not put off by the question that I asked. I'm not put off by the answer I got. I am sort of put off by the inference that some Steelers fans have had, though, to the fact that I asked the question in the first place, like it was disrespectful to ask Mike Tomlin that, or even if that was disrespectful for the notion to go out there that Tomlin might do this. You know, for as much as you might think that Doug Whaley shouldn't have said what he said about LSU and USC, for as much as you think that Ryan Clark was going too far with his in front of God and country quotes or whatever the hell he said, for much as you might think that Carson Palmer was screwing with the Steelers and screwing with LSU because he's at USC, you're right maybe on all that, but none of them said it with the tone. None of them said it with the inference. None of them said it with the speculation that Tomlin's going to get fired and we're here if he needs us. That's not what anybody was saying. Nobody was saying that. They were saying, each and every one of them was saying, if he doesn't want to stay in Pittsburgh anymore, if he doesn't want to stay with the franchise once Ben Roethlisberger leaves, if he wants a change of scenery, if he wants a different challenge, if he ever thought about being a college coach before and now has an inkling because two really good jobs are open, this is a chance. If he just wants to try a different challenge, whatever. Like, it wasn't disrespectful for anybody to float that idea out there because Tomlin has won a Super Bowl. It might have been short-sighted. It might have not made any sense. But I really don't understand why I'm being accused of being disrespectful for asking it by some, and why others are going after Whaley, Palmer, and Clark for trying to get the coach that they think is best for the gig. Or in the case of Whaley, putting out something that he thinks might be true. 412-333-9939. Tim calling from Ohio. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, how you doing, Tim?
Good.
Hey, I don't understand, like, why you keep going on and on about this question. I mean, you asked a question. It was a good question. You got an answer, but it's like taking...
Because up, you're not like, me on Twitter looking at people going after me saying I was being disrespectful. I had one person saying I was being racist. You know, like, that's why.
Oh, my
because-
God. Okay. Never... I retract the question then.
So I'm defending why it was, because like I have gotten as many, well, not as many, actually, most people have gotten my back on it against the few that have lashed out. So if I'm being hyperbolic about the minority of responses that have come versus the majority that I feel like most people appreciate why I asked the question, you're probably right. I'm probably overreacting to that. But for those that are upset about it, I would say that the reason I did it was because I thought a response was warranted. And gee whiz, the 4 or 5 days of silence haven't done anything to make the story go away, right? I mean, the story has grown legs the longer it's been out there. So that's the best answer I can give you.
Good question, but I just didn't understand why he's going on and on about it today. But I didn't know he was getting so
well,
much.
I was getting some shtick on it from Twitter from some people, yeah. John in Bridgeville, you're on 105.9 The X.
Hey, I just wanted to say, you know, like, you never know what somebody's secret job is or what their, you know, maybe I want to do this job is. Like, it's just a question. So just ask it and, you know, refute it.
Yeah, and that's what he did. And I think some other coaches have a more tangible reason to not do that, right? Like, James Franklin has a tangible reason to not do that. He might get a lot more money for a job that's just as good or better. So but I don't think this is, in Tomlin's eyes, a better job, and he may not get any more money out of it anyway. So that's why he was able to
better.
That might be why he was able to refute it as cleanly as he did.
I'm not saying it's better. I'm saying maybe secretly, like,
yeah,
he always wanted to be the coach of XYZ.
Yeah,
right?
I got you. No, I got you. I doubt that's the case, but you're right. That could be something that he's always wanted to do. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. 412-333-9939. Yeah, that was the other part of it. That's why I phrased it the way I did. Did you ever say at any point you really wanted to be the head coach of a college program? I wouldn't think so. I think there's a lot more crap that goes along with college football than in the pros, and Tomlin doesn't like to deal with crap. He didn't like to deal with my crappy question, for crying out loud. All right, we come back. Speaking of the Steelers and a more germane argument about their season coming up, the rest of it anyway, the Browns game on Sunday, I think they're really going to miss Stephon Tuitt in this one. We'll hear what Tomlin had to say about him next.
And now, the super genius, Mark Madden.
Super genius, big fan.
Hashtag best in the world.
You are the super genius.
I'll say, and then some.
The X at 105.9.
Brought to you by Matt Mertz Plumbing, count on a name you can trust, 412-367-0815. Tim Benson from Mark Madden, got the Hockey Night Show coming up. In just a few minutes, I'm going to give you a chance to win some tickets to go to tonight's game or Thursday night's game? Thursday night's game. Yeah, 90s night. All right. Hey, for the X, that's perfect, right? 90s night for Thursday night. For the game that the Penguins will be playing at PPG Paints Arena. They play the Lightning tonight. Brian Metz of the Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network is going to join us for the first segment of the Hockey Night Show brought to you by Gecko. Interesting note here from ESPN Stats and Info about the World Series. Fewest wins in the playoff field 7 times. This is the 7th time in the wild card era. So since 1995, 7th time in the wild card era that a team with the least amount of wins has gotten all the way to the World Series. It's been the Cardinals twice, Rangers in 10, Tigers in 12, Yankees in 2000. And then the Braves this year after the Giants won it in 2014. The Cardinals have won it twice in 2011 and 2006. So this could be the 4th time in World Series history with the team who has the smallest win total, 88 for the Braves this year, as a chance to win the whole ball of wax before it's all said and done. I did get one other question in the Mike Tomlin press conference today, besides the one that Mike didn't seem to like about the college coaches. But this one I thought was quite illuminating, about the status of Stephon Tuitt and how some of the other defensive linemen are handling the job of trying to make up reps and snaps for him and Tyson Alualu.
Yep, no update on him. His return is not imminent this week. I don't anticipate it, but although it's going well, he's progressing, but not close enough for participation. We've had some challenges in the defensive line, not only the two that you mentioned, but Carlos Davis has missed some time. But it has provided opportunities for growth. I've been pleased with the general growth and development of Loudermilk. Man, we're challenging Isaiah Bugs, man, to step up and be a consistent varsity contributor. He's a guy that's been around here a number of years now, and opportunity is knocking for him due to the misfortune with Tyson. And so that's the component of this thing that makes football the ultimate team game. Some challenges associated with the guys that you mentioned not being available, but it's also opportunity for others. You know, we're excited about continuing to watch the growth and development of some of those others and watching them answer the bell and rise up and meet the challenges.
The biggest challenge is Nick Chubb and the offensive line for the Cleveland Browns on Sunday. I really think that some of the tackling issues that you're seeing from the second and third levels of the Steelers defense are partially tied to the fact that the holes are big enough, the reads are easy enough for the running backs to get through in the spots vacated by Alualu and Tuitt due to injury, that, you know, you're seeing backs hit the hole with steam, with momentum. They have the ability to set up their cuts. They have the ability to set up a stiff arm, a spin move, what have you. Ability to read the second and third levels of the defenses because they're getting through the first wave cleanly. And I think that's a problem. And then on top of that, you know, maybe some of the offensive linemen getting downfield and changing the angles on the linebackers and safeties, changing the angles and the corners coming up and trying to make tackles. That's why you're seeing some of the missed tackles from those in the secondary, not exclusively, but partially. I think it's all intertwined. All right, time now to give away some tickets to the game on Thursday night between the Penguins and who is it again? Flames. That's right, the Flames. I'm so stuck in the Lightning. The Flames on Thursday night for 90s night. First, let's see here. Oh, I know what I'll do. Since Carson Palmer wore number 3 at USC, let's do that. All right, Carson Palmer wore 3 at USC. So third caller, 412-333-9939. You get tickets to the Thursday night game for the Penguins and Flames for 90s night. And then we'll have Brian Metzer next to talk about the Lightning and the Pens next here on 105.9 The X.
X. And now the super genius, Mark Madden.
I would want total and absolute autonomy.
Hey, Mark. Great show. Are you part psychic?
Well, I'm actually more neurotic than psychic.
The X at 105.9.
Time now for the Hockey Night Show, presented by Get-Go. Brian Metzer of the Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network joins me, Tim Benz, right now, filling in for Mark Madden. Tonight, you can hear him intermission and post-game after the Penguins and Lightning play each other. For the second time this year, Pens winning the first game in the banner-raising opening night festivities down in Tampa, and it's been pretty good moving forward since then for the Pens, and it's been a little bit troublesome for the Tampa Bay Lightning, up to and including a 5-1 loss to the Buffalo Sabres in their most recent game last night. Mets, more surprising so far to see the Penguins where they are at, 3-0-2, or where the Lightning are at this point with some of the struggles they've had, including that first game against the Pens.
Well, while both things are surprising, Tim, I think that the Tampa situation is a little bit more so because they were... It's almost as if Denny Green got involved because they were being crowned as three-peat champs already before they even took the ice this year. And they have not led for a single moment of a game yet this season, which is just mind-blowing to me. that the Tampa Bay Lightning have not been able to really get themselves on track here. Steven Stamkos is off to a good start, but Braden Point, just two goals so far. I think Palat just has maybe one. Hedman has some assists, but no goals. And then, of course, Kucherov's back on the shelf, and they're leaving their goaltender out to dry on most nights. So, to me, that's a little bit of a bigger surprise than the Penguins' start, mainly because I thought that they would be able to weather the storm of all the injuries, maybe not this many, because there's even more than we anticipated, just because of their history, Tim. They've done such a good job with Mike Sullivan at the helm with weathering injuries in the past. I thought they would be able to come out and tread water and maintain, and they've done even more than that. So Tampa more surprising to me right now.
Yeah, I thought that Carter and Letang being added to the COVID list or the injured list, however you want to describe it, for where the Penguins are, I thought that would be the backbreaker. And then to turn around and see them blow out any team, whether it's the Maple Leafs or not in their situation, any team 7-1, that was just eye-opening to me.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I didn't anticipate that sort of explosion. Now, I guess we have to stir in the fact that the Toronto Maple Leafs just are in a shambles right now. I don't know what is going on with them. There is panic in the streets up in Toronto. I've been talking to a couple friends that cover the team. I talked to Boomer Gordon from the NHL radio up there, and he said he's just sitting back and enjoying watching this. But to that point, I'm with you. You take Letang out of the mix. You take Jeff Carter out. I thought they would come down to earth a little bit, and lo and behold, everybody just continued to rise to the occasion. Evan Rodriguez goes out as your top-line center and looked the part. I thought he had a very quality hockey game. I thought all the guys that are perceived to be third-liners, they are shouldering a heavier load and doing a fine job. O'Connor just is a revelation this season. I know I'm almost thinking people were a little too effusive in the praise of him, but at the same time, he goes out and continues to perform at a high level. He has three goals now and looks like maybe he should play up the lineup a little bit when everybody's healthy, so we'll see how that plays out. So I am with you there. I just thought that they took the Maple Leafs by surprise the other night. They certainly outworked them throughout the game. I think the Leafs only had one moment in the game where they pushed back, and it was on that first period power play where they kind of took it to the Penguins. Jarry helped them get through that, and then the Penguins just took full advantage with knocking pucks off of Leafs defensemen and in and getting some big goals and then running away with it, putting up a touchdown on Toronto. It was great to see.
Yeah, the scoring to me has been extremely impressive for the Penguins. What are they, third in the NHL right now in points per game? And I love the way that they've managed to maintain offense despite so much offense being absent. I wonder, Mets, and I think we're all wondering this, when the star players do come back, how do they continue to play? Do they continue to play this way? Or how does it change, do you think? And will they be able to maintain the offense and have this symmetry, this chemistry, for maybe a better way to phrase it, between system and skill? Will it meld as well as we hope that it will when everybody comes back?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, is it not? Because we've seen this in the past where they are able to play so well when that skill is out of the lineup, and that's maybe based on playing a little bit more blue-collar. I heard you and Stan talking earlier. They have been more systemic, more defensive-minded. And are you going to be able to maintain that with guys like Gino and Letang, et cetera? Now, they were doing fine with Chris Letang in the lineup, so I think that will work itself out. They were doing fine when Jeff Carter was there before he got sick, so I think that'll be fine. And I fully believe that Sidney Crosby could play this same style. I think the wild card comes into play when we get Evgeny Malkin back in. And that's no knock on Gino, but he just tends to freelance a little bit, go out there and look for the offensive opportunities. Now, this is an interesting point that it was talked about last game up in the press box with a couple people. Maybe Gino will be more apt to play into the system because his lower body won't be where it should be. He certainly will be able to play the game because they won't have him out there unless he is capable of playing.
You're saying he'll be slowed down into the system? Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, because he won't be able to go out and gallop around and do all of those things. And I think it may have been Rossi who said this the other day. He goes, well, maybe you'll get playoff Gino when he was playing on one leg and put up 5 points in four games or whatever it was, which would be just fine by me. So I think that's something to keep our eye on. So I do think it will be tough to maintain exactly what they're doing right now, but it's going to certainly be intriguing, and it's going to be a good problem for Mike Sullivan to have because it's going to be tough for him to decide who gets a jersey on a nightly basis based on all of these guys that that look like they deserve to be playing right now.
Brian Metzer, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network, intermission and post-game host here on 105.9 The X. Pens and Lightning coming up on The X at 7 o'clock. Okay, Mets, Phil Bork got a little upset with me about this. We were talking about that game against Toronto, and I made the comment I was covering the Pitt game at the time and you know, came up from doing interviews and writing the story a little bit, and I hear somebody say, oh my gosh, now it's 4-1. And I said, geez, did they pull Jari yet? And they said, no, 4-1 Penguins. And you know, Phil said, well, why would you assume that Jari was playing so badly and that he would be pulled? And then he kind of went at me for doubting Jari. And I said, no, my point was I can't believe the Penguins have scored that much with so few people in the lineup. But he seems to be very much on board with the notion that Jari, he just had a bad playoff, and let's not pin that on him throughout the rest of this season or his career. Where are you when it comes to adjudicating Jari and his play in the regular season, absent of that whole specter of, well, it's not the playoffs yet?
To me, I think that he's proven to be a fine and capable regular season goaltender over the course of his career. Yes, he's had some moments where he's dipped in the regular season, but when you see what he did last March, he was just spectacular. His numbers were eye-popping. And then he got to the playoffs and did what he did. So for me, I'm thrilled with how he's performed so far this year. He has a sub 1.5 goals against. His save percentage is almost at 950. He's done a really nice job for this team so far. And it was on full display the other night when he shut down the Leafs power play when they came at him with shot after shot after shot. I think they had five on goal. Matthews hit a post. It was under siege, and he got them through it. So that's the way he's been playing right now. But until he does get back out there and have the opportunity to be in a playoff series and show that last year was an anomaly, we have no way of knowing. So I'm not ready to just automatically give him the pass that you know some people are asking for. I said this to Mark last week, Tim, or the last time I was on. I think everybody is trying to talk themselves into believing it's just fine and dandy. Because if you listen to the coaching staff and you listen to all his teammates and everybody who covers the team, everybody's like, wow, this is the revelation. He's doing so well. And rightly so. His play is where it is. He should be praised for it. But until he goes out and does it in the playoffs, I think that question will loom. It's going to be a specter hanging over him. And what's going to really tell the tale for us here, Tim, will the Penguins allow themselves to go into the playoffs this year with Jari as the number one guy and the only option? Because that's what they did last year. They figured they'd have Casey DeSmith available. Well, he got hurt, and then they had no other option, so they just had Jari. That tells me they might look to bring in another option, even just as for some depth, so that if he goes down, they have somebody with some playoff experience or something that could step in. Because last year, I think we all know that if they had another option, he would have been in the net ahead of Tristan Jari after a couple of those performances. But that said, I'm very thrilled with how he's playing, and I think we'll give him the hat tip that he's doing a great job in this regular season so far.
You know, people talk about his body language a lot. I don't necessarily pick up on his body language in terms of confidence or how he's feeling about himself. I've heard Sullivan talk about this. Borky talked about this too. I think what those guys consider body language, I see as more like proper positioning and technique and being sound in that regard when he's playing well, you know, and almost like buying into his teaching. What do you think?
I'm with you a little bit there, Kim, because, well, yes, he does seem confident. He doesn't seem as if he's, you know, he's overthinking anything, first of all. So that might be what they're getting at. And I know that everybody's going with that Sully quote about him exuding confidence right now, which is good. I mean, that's a great thing if he is. But to your point, I think Andy Chiodo, everybody wondered how the coaching change would work in terms of the goaltending coach. And I think Chiodo has done and said a lot of great things with these goaltenders. He's seemingly working on positioning, keeping their feet in the right places, getting themselves positioned properly in the net. And I love some of the things he has done, though. Focus on where you are right in that moment, right where your skates are. The puck has no memory was something else he said. And it seems as if he's almost gotten a little bit cerebral with these guys, and I'm talking about the Smith in that conversation as well, telling them, look, focus on the next save, the next puck that you have to face, which is kind of what Jari used to talk about. It's what Matt Murray used to talk about, but I don't think that they enacted it all that well. Jari seems to be doing that right now. Even when he gives up one, even if it's not the greatest goal you've ever seen, he locks it down and he's holding teams to, you know, two or less goals almost every single time he's out. It's a small sample size so far, but we'll see if he can continue that moving forward. But I would say that's definitely an upgrade in the way he is being coached, and he's certainly taking everything that Andy Kyoto is giving him to heart, or so it seems.
Let's wrap up with this before we go. Sid Letang, Carter, one of those guys back. What's the health status of some of the missing guys?
It sounds like Carter should be able to get out of the COVID protocol by the end of this week. Mike Sullivan didn't know the exact day that that would happen, but maybe that means he's available for the weekend. And he stayed asymptomatic, so they said he's not exhibiting any issues with COVID. Letang is probably going to be a little bit more of a tougher road. They say he is exhibiting some symptoms, so the protocol, I'm sure, changes a little bit in that scenario, so we'll see what happens there. Sidney Crosby almost appears to be an any night kind of call. He's been rolled out against the Lightning this evening, but I'm sure we'll be paying close attention as he takes the ice on the pregame skate on Thursday ahead of the 90s night and the Flames game, because he is doing everything. He's going through practice a little bit more every day. He took line rushes at least partially the other day, and it looks like he is teetering on the edge of getting back in the lineup. So if I was going to place a bet on it, I would say, you know, maybe you could take a shot at Thursday or the weekend for Sidney Crosby.
Mets, thanks. Appreciate it. Look forward to whatever music beds you put together for 90s night, all right?
I'm going to be working hard on that, but we'll probably leave it up to Billy Wareham. He does a great job with all that.
Thanks, Mets.
Thanks, Tim. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Brian Metzer, who will be hosting on Friday, Penguins Radio Network, intermission and post-game host, our guest here on the Hockey Night Show, presented by GetGo. When we come back here on 105.9 The X, Armstrong, a thought on Sidney Crosby's health. If you missed that from earlier, we'll have it for you next to wrap up the Hockey Night Show on The X.
Portions of the following program were pre-recorded.
And now, the super genius, Mark Madden.
Yada, 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 yada.
You know what, Mark? I got a hard time, and I was wondering if you'd give me some advice.
Do you have any idea how dumb that sounds?
The X at 105.9.
Penguins Lightning for the second time this year after a Penguins 6-2 victory in Game 1 during the banner-raising ceremony in Tampa Bay. Penguins won that one. John Cooper, of course, lit into his team afterwards, said that he thought that they could have played the Wilkes-Barre-Scranton Penguins and still lost with the way they played. And I think a lot of people basically reminded John Cooper at that point, you kind of did, looking at the lineup that the Penguins had, or more specifically to the point didn't have, that includes Sidney Crosby, who, as Brian Metzer just told us, you know, maybe Thursday for Calgary for 90s night, or maybe Saturday against the Devils. And, hey, maybe what about this? If he wants to go through one more weekend, Thursday night against the Flyers to come back, that'd be something. If Sid would return against his favorite team. But I asked Colby Armstrong when I was filling in for Mark on Friday when we were at the Rivers Casino. He knows Sid really well. How long had this wrist thing really been bothering Sidney Crosby?
No, I had no clue about that. Yeah, I knew it's been bothering him for quite some time, and I knew he's been dealing with it in the off season, trying to rest it and stuff. And I didn't know it was gotten to the point where, you know, he had to go under the knife and get it taken care of to fix it up.
And it does make you wonder how much his playoff scoring has been impacted as that injury has lingered, and I would guess has gotten worse as seasons have gone along. And as I pointed out on Friday as well, I wonder how the jagged speculation of the two COVID years that we've had played into his decision-making. In other words, you know, how long is the off season going to be, or more to the point, how short is the off season going to be before we get back on the ice after the extended late Stanley Cup in the bubble? You know, they got knocked out early. Maybe they could have snuck it in there. No one knew any answers to any questions, though. And how long was the pandemic going to last? And how would that impact his ability to rehab and everything else? There was so much speculation that I wonder if, who knows, he was saying to himself towards the end of 2019, 2020, yep, I'm going to get it done after this year. And next thing you know, he couldn't do it. They find themselves in the bubble. They get knocked out. They don't know when the next season starts. And then midway through the offseason this year, he tried to give it one more go because of the way things wrapped up after getting knocked out in the first round. Let me tough it out so I don't put us behind the eight ball to start the season. And He just can't go through the pain anymore. And this was a year where rest didn't make it go away. You know, I just think there's a lot of questions still to be answered about how that went down for Crosby and how long it's truly been bothering him and impacting him. And even if his friends like Colby Armstrong don't know the true story, you know, there's some privacy that Sid has gathered throughout the course of the past few off seasons surrounding this injury that he still doesn't want to have come to light. And maybe it's been bothering him for a lot longer than we pretended to admit. And he even said, what, going back to 2014 when Ryan Reeves hit him, coming out from the playoffs, that's a long time. We mentioned about all the struggles of the Tampa Bay Lightning so far. One of the guys not struggling so far, Steven Stamkos, 9 points in six games. Still a minus four, though. We know that the Lightning will be looking for revenge after the banner-raising fallout, the way they played against the Penguins, the way the Penguins upset them, and the way the coach excoriated their play. It'll be an interesting watch and an interesting listen tonight. Make sure you check it out on 105.9 The X tomorrow. We'll be back with more after the game tonight. We'll wrap it up here. Tim Benz in for Mark Madden on 105.9 The X.